the Alaska Native Review Commission, and we're holding this gathering in Saxman this morning to give people here in Saxman, especially the elders, an opportunity to speak about the history of land claims and about the concerns they have about ANCSA and 1991, all of these other questions. So we're glad to be here. And I think I should say for the record that the hearing is being held in the original mission school established at Saxman near the turn of the century. Testimony that people give will be taken down, and if you wouldn't mind coming over here to sit when you speak, and that means that Jeff Berliner, who's here with me, can make a permanent record of what is said. It'll be taped and then typed up. And I think you know Mary Kenswick, who's working with our commission, and my wife Beverly is here too. And she will, if you don't mind, perhaps take one or two photographs this morning as we're proceeding. So, having said that, if anybody would like to say a few words, if you wouldn't mind just coming over here and sitting perhaps in this chair, we can just carry on in that way.
I'm pleased to see that this is going on. I personally feel that this would benefit all our corporations in our state, and that hopefully when you do have your report and it does come back to the people, that there will be changes that will be reflected by our corporations. My name is Norma Jean Dunn. I am a Saxman resident, and I have written down my thoughts. I also have my husband Francis Dunn's recorded, and he requested that there be no press during his portion of the presentation. I'll begin with mine.
Then we'll figure out what to do after that.
Okay, thank you. My name is Norma Jean Dunn, and I'm a member of the Tungus tribe, the Cape Fox tribe, Tsimshian tribe, and believe it or not, I'm also have some Haida in me also. I was raised in Metlakatla, an island reservation, which is located 15 miles southeast of here. I joined Sciatica, an ANSCA corporation, at the time of enrollment. My husband, daughter, and I registered in Sitka. The dissension the land claims has brought about, Sitka versus Angoon, is not what we had wished for. We were raised to listen to our elders, our leaders. ANSCA was their legacy for us. My father died in 1978. He was a Sea Alaska member. My mother gave up those rights in 1980. She was coerced and to remain in Metlakatla to work a state job as a baker through the schools. She returned all Sea Alaska shares that my father fought so hard to stay a Sea Alaska member, just to keep home and job and family together. I personally feel that this was illegal and it caused a lot of alienation. My husband, daughter, and I are community members of Saxman. This is considered our hometown. I believe that the land claims has been a catalyst to the endangered species, the Aboriginal peoples, and their culture. It has divided tribal members, communities like Angoon versus Sitka, the elders versus capitalistic corporations, or tribal law versus non-native law. Where do we, the Aboriginals, go? Federal government believes that ANSCA will pave the way to survival. Health programs are diminishing. Education programs are phasing out. Welfare programs are becoming the avenue of the past. All these social service programs which we grew up on. Because our corporations through ANSCA have paved the way, as people believe. But they haven't. state programs have diminished. Are we classified as first-class or second-class citizens? Our history has always said we are first-class, upper-class citizens, unless slaves. We are slaves. They, state, city, and federal, tell us, dictate what we can do to survive. We were subsistence people, planned by the season to survive on what this great land provided, and to share if we had more than our families and our tribal communities with those who couldn't gather what nature provided. This is no longer true. To subsist costs a small fortune for gas, boats, time away from jobs and family, and then dictated to pay for that right. This is a luxury item no longer afforded by all Aboriginal peoples. Our tribal laws are no longer. The state and federal laws dictate who has carved or who has earned those rights. To carve a totem pole, can we offer $1,000 a foot? To weave a basket, how far do we travel and on whose land are we trespassing? To gather food, how much is dictated by the landowner and at what price do we pay for it? Do we respect our elders who are few, and how do we tell them it has to be approved first by corporation or city or state or federal governments? As these corporations, our guardians, attempt to survive in the capitalistic nature, it is a lonely fight from an Aboriginal participant thrust from wards of the government and pushed into the capitalistic nature. A few will survive. We are told to retrieve the past is for a select few or our elders. To survive today is to compete educationally and economically or be forgotten. It is like watching the TV show The Final Days of Pompeii. Only a boatload will survive in this great state owned by the Aboriginals, the Eskimos, Aleuts, Athabascans, Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshians. And who will help them? Will the final act reflect and be as tumultuous as the Aboriginal? Who wrote the tragedy? 1991, when it comes, we must keep these shares. It is the only proof that we are the Aboriginal peoples. They, the stock certificates, may be pieces of paper, but they verify our existence, past, present, and future. Can and do we give that verification to a foreigner? Someone else, do they have our birthrights? I'm Native, my mother is Native, my grandmother is Native, and so my great-grandmother. Do I have the right, or my daughter or her future children have a right to label or turn over to someone else to be the caretaker of our Aboriginal claim? We control our destiny, no matter who guides it. We can guide our destinies. We can tell them who we are. We are remembered, and this is our history. Management versus tribal ways, or non-native versus native tribal laws. Who is right? And are we monuments to be put into a museum for a curator to describe our flowery past and ways? Can we Aboriginal peoples describe our traditions or our culture? How it was then, now, and our future. I'm optimistic that the past supports the present to pave the way for the future, and we are the survivors, and we can be the fittest, and we can provide survival for those in the future. That is mine.
Thank you, Mrs. Dunn. Can I just ask you a question about your mother? You said that your mother was a shareholder of Sea Alaska.
All my family members were my father, my three brothers, and my sister. And in order for them to remain in Metlakatla and to get those benefits and to keep their home, they were told either to give up those rights or move. Or if they did give up their rights, then they would be able to get those benefits for education, jobs, and all. So they did give them up. My father, when he did pass away in 1978, he had been a Sea Alaska. He was very much interested in what the corporation was doing for the people, and he was supportive. And when he passed away, my mother was without my father, and so for her to keep her job, she had to give up those certificates.
So she surrendered her shares in Sea Alaska to keep her job.
And home.
And home. Who was she working for?
It's a state job for the schools.
And she's living still in Metlakatla?
Oh, yes.
I see. Well, thank you very much for your presentation. You mentioned that you have your husband's presentation and you intend to read it into the record, but your husband wished that it not be read in the presence of the press. There is no press here in the sense of there being nobody from the newspaper, but there is a representative of the public radio. Public radio.
Mm-hmm.
If your husband's statement is read into the record, it'll become part of the permanent record of the proceedings,
mm-hmm.
and can be, in that sense,
mm-hmm.
is part of the public record,
mm-hmm.
so that it isn't. I don't quite know how things work around here, but
I have talked with her, and she did say that she would not record it.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. This is from my husband, Francis Dunn. Honorable Thomas Berger, Commissioner, other members of the Alaska Native Review Committee. My name is Norma Jean Dunn. My husband, Francis, is unable to be here, but wishes me to present his thoughts to you for your consideration. He says, thank you for including in your review plans our special community, Saxman, whose population is approximately 300 residents and whose community boundaries as a second-class city are within an organized borough and immediately adjacent to a first-class city whose combined population is approximately 13,000 people. Saxman has no employer whose emphasis, in fact, is local native hire. Of the approximately 18 permanent full-time employment positions located in our community, 7 are filled by Native Americans. Our community population makeup is approximately 95% Native. That equals 38% Native employment. Saxman, for the most part, is a residential community. I was hoping that ANSCA would change that by developing meaningful local employment opportunities. In fact, I was hoping for a lot more in retrospect. When I realized the terms of the Land Settlement Act, which was a mere penance when compared to its real worth, 200,000 acres for our region and the same for our village corporations combined, it seemed as though I should have been a land baron by this time. The valuable timber stands harvested at an average rate of 150 million board feet a year with a price of approximately 50 cents per board foot or $75 million a year should have made me a rich man by now. These values have not included the cash the state and federal governments passed to the corporations during their formative years, some of which we shared. So today when I ask our corporation board of directors who gained their position through a popularity contest, there are basically no other requirements than to be a voting shareholder with a majority vote at our annual meeting. Why I am not rich, they say. The cost of operating is so expensive and the profit margin is so small, and we have blundered $5 million loss in 1982 and $28 million loss in 1983, that there is barely enough money left over to pay our chief operating officer $230,000 a year and keep him in Seattle while our majority activity takes place in Alaska. And don't forget, we have 17 executives, not counting our board, who make $75,000 and more a year. The money has to come from somewhere. Okay, I say. But then I ask, if things are so tough, why do we continue to harvest our second most valuable resource, timber, shareholders being the first? Why can't we leave it standing and concentrate on fishing and construction material, other investments?
They say, we can't afford not to harvest and sell, even at a loss. I'm a good shareholder, so I say, okay, but if I'm not rich, and if I'm not going to get rich because I give away my resources to keep 17 executives in the $3 million total payroll range, and if I must keep numerous contractor employers in business with an employment force of 700 in 1983 in the logging and road building business, including their reasonable profit, how come I am unemployed after working for a subsidiary company for 3.5 years where I personally influenced the employment of more shareholders in the timber industry than ever before or since? They say, that is the way it is. Times are tough. We have to make cuts somewhere. Only the most knowledgeable can be retained. Then I say, I did more of what I was hired to do with no on-the-job training than other non-shareholders who required on-the-job training and are still employed. Well, Your Honor, so it goes. My expectations were probably not real anyway. Another area of concern is the polarization that was caused between families of Metlakatla Indian community. Those who chose to participate in the land claims were virtually expelled from their community. To return requires disassociating oneself with ANSCA. It's ironic, but the same law that allowed Metlakatla to incorporate for profit, the Act of 1934 amended in 1936, is the same act that recognizes me as an Indian, the IRA Act. Why can't I be both a shareholder and a member of my original community? Thank goodness Saxman has adopted me. In terms of me being better off now than before the Claims Act issue, it's hard to decide. Monetarily, probably not. Socially, I would rather be involved in Indian country than the non-native community. Nothing changed in that area. With regards to politics, prior to going to work for a Native corporation, I was very much involved in Native affairs. During ANSCA corporate employment, I was successfully prevented from involvement by my non-Native superiors, who felt threatened by the very people they were hired to serve. Final comment in this area. It seems as though with the hundreds of millions of dollars realized as a result of processing, harvesting, and the marketing of our resources, both renewable and non-renewable, building bricks, fish processing, timber, and others, we as shareholders should be benefiting to a greater extent, or the board of directors and management need to become more concerned with the ventures that can realize a better return for the dollars invested. Recommendation. Reduce the 18-man board to a 9-member board. Of the 9 members, 5 will be voting shareholders as selected by a competent advisory committee based on their business prowess. 4 other members will not necessarily be shareholders, but professionals from large corporations such as IBM, Standard Oil of California, Chase Manhattan Bank, etc. These experts will control the assets of the members in terms of investments for maximum return. The corporate officers will also be highly skilled professionals with successful track records who will be hired with the notion that selected shareholders will be assigned to them for purpose of gaining accelerated on-the-job experience. Eventually, these experienced, skilled shareholders will manage our corporate affairs. While on-the-job training may be inconsistent with maximum profit, it is no more costly than the losses posted over the last several years. It makes good sense to invest it, the corporation's members, one resource, its shareholders. On every parade, a little sun must shine. The existence of ANSCA corporations has allowed a subsistence type of people to experience the world of business, a commodity necessary in today's aggressive society. While it is critical that we as a Native community preserve our culture as a means of identity, it is also important to accept a certain amount of acculturation in terms of society's mainstream. especially in the area of influencing our current needs and future direction. The ANSCA, the Indian Self-Determination Act, and the Indian Reorganization Act have all served as a vehicle of awareness. These acts and others have shown us that we must take a more aggressive role in managing our affairs if we are to be allowed to take greater advantage of those rights and privileges afforded other cultures and societies. Recommendation: all ANSCA corporations must work together and share successes. Each time a corporation fails, it weakens the remaining entities. ANSCA is not just an act. It is a rallying point for a people. If all of our corporations survive, we become a stronger people. Finally, 1991. If we take care of our corporations and assist now, they will take care of us on 1991 and beyond. The fact that any shareholder would consider selling their stock is testimony that our resources are being managed at a lesser degree than expected. We still have time to reverse the current state of affairs and cause our shareholders to cherish their corporate stock, not only as a monetary worth, but as a sense of pride and identity. Having said that, Your Honor, please extend our appreciation to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous Peoples for hearing us. We are hopeful that whatever you learn from us will be helpful to them and their goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Dunn, and our thanks to Mr. Dunn for making his presentation available to us through you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, since we began this morning, some others have joined us, and perhaps I should just say once again that my name is Tom Berger, and I am here to conduct the Alaska Native Review Commission. And this is a review of the Claims Act, the settlement of 1971. We're looking at the corporate structure and the corporations and the way they've worked out. We're looking at 1991 and the question of the sale of shares and the implications, the consequences of the sale of shares, taxation of native land. And the purpose is to give you, the Alaska Native people, an opportunity to speak out on these questions. I will write a report that will be made public next year, and it'll be based on what you tell me at meetings like this that I'm holding all around the state. And if you wouldn't mind coming forward where Mrs. Dunn was seated to speak, and Mr. Brother Jeff Berliner, who's seated next to me, is just taking down everything that is said on tape so that it's a permanent record of what is said that we can rely on. On the wall over there, and about the origins of this school established, I guess, many years ago when the people asked the missionaries to bring a school in. If some of you here are able to tell me a little bit, tell us a little bit about the history of Saxmon and about land claims here.
Right there. Right?
So that we know how we got where we are today and where some of you who are who've been around a little while, where you think the Alaska Native people ought to go now.
Yeah.
And
just about
you want only the corporation subject or anything there that affects us or what?
Oh, anything that affects you, including the corporation, and how you feel about the land. You see, if the shares are sold in 1991, the shares in the corporations are sold in 1991, then outsiders could take over the corporations and then they would hold native land. And we wanted to know how you feel about that. Other villages we've been to, the native people say we want to hold on to our land. But some, a minority, but some native people say, well, I'll sell my shares and I'll get the money, and if that means that we lose our land, that's too bad. So it's these questions of land subsistence and whether or not the children born since 1971 should have a right to participate in the settlement, and all of those questions. What do you think is important for me to hear, really?
lot of things affects us in all phases of our life.
Well, why don't you come over here and tell me a little bit about it? Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe you could just give me your name.
My name is Mary Denny.
Thank you.
I've been living here ever since 1934, 33, 32, somewhere around there. And I've been watching Saxman grow from people where they didn't know how to speak English. Went a long ways from that time on to now. Different things there that we didn't know how to do things there, but we did the best we could. And we're all interested in having Saxman grow. We want to hear whatever's going on with the rest of the towns and the rest of the world there, and if we know about it there, we do something about it. We get somebody there that understands about those things there, and a lot of times there we're bypassed there from things here that we want to learn, but we try to do the best we can. This land claims here that is going through here in this part of the world there is something really interesting to me, and I believe there to the other people too. It's too bad there that it has to be held in the morning because some of the people are working for their living and they can't get to it. Maybe some of them go to a Ketchikan and listen to there, but their problems is different than ours, and we have our own problems here in Saxman. So everything there that goes through there is always Ketchikan there that's being mentioned all the time there, but it don't concern us. We can't put our problems through to the person there that's going through, and we get left out altogether. So I'm glad there that we get to have this part of the land claims and how it affects us here. At least we have one morning anyhow, 2-3 hours. But that's not very much there to tell about what all the things there that we need to have here in Saxman there. And therefore we can't voice out what we want to see Alaska Corporation, although we're part of it there, and it's such a small place there, we can never get together all one time there in a meeting there. As you see it, everybody has their own thing to do. They have to work for their living, and therefore they have to go to town, as Norma Jean mentioned there, that they have to go to town there to have what they need, the jobs there that they need there. We don't have no employers down here. Very few of them ever do get jobs there from what jobs they have here in Saxman. And all the rest has to go to town or else other places there. A lot of our people is down Seattle and other parts of the United States there so that they can have their livelihood being taken care of. And we can make an effort to make our town any bigger than what it is now, because they have to go outside of town to make their livelihood. And just because we're just only a few here actually in Saxman there, we we can't get the things there that we need to grow, have Sacramento grow, have more people here on account of that. Because there's no jobs here and there's not enough employers. Even our church and our school, they actually had the Presbyterian people bring the people from Cape Fox to give the people the church there that they needed, the religion there that they needed, and the school there that they needed at that time there. They brought the people from over there so they could have those there. We don't have it now. Even the church there, Salvation Army, the only church there most of the people go to, they want to move it to Ketchikan. But we fought against that so that we could have it. But still, there's a lot of things there that points to the fact there that they still want it in Ketchikan. We still have the good building, and we have the worn out building down here, and they're not making an effort to do anything for the upkeep of the building there. So there's a lot of phases in our life there that this land claims affects us in different ways. What they want for their family. We expected the first time there that they were talking about the land claims there, that each family was going to benefit from this land claims there, but it's not so. It's the people as a whole right now there that's getting the benefit out of it. And the people there that even then, it's only the people there that's running the corporations there that are getting the benefit out of it there, and the people at large there is not getting anything out of it, that is money wise, and a lot of the families need money to help them out with their livelihood there, an extra help there for what they're doing for their livelihood right now. And they need that extra money there to help them out in their livelihood. And we expected to have a real good life there. In our AMB, it says there that we joined the ANB and ANS there so that we can come up to the par of the white man to do everything there that they want to. But still, it seems like they're pushing us down on our heads there and pushing us way down. But we try our best there. We fight for what we want, although it's just a feeble try. But we do our best there to fight for the things there that we need. And we expected to have it a little bit easier when the land claims came through. And everybody was happy about it, but now they're that. There's only a few people there that get the benefit out of the land claims money that went through. And they're talking about selling your shares there to other people in 1991. And I think there's going to be a lot of shares being sold out to other people. Even white people will have the benefit of that there. It all depends upon the individual there. But I'd like to see there that the shares of the native people be circulated among themselves instead of being sold to the white people. White people can take care of themselves there. They found different ways of taking care of themselves. Native people is just now starting out. Although it's been quite a long time there that we started out, but still, we're still in a basic living there and learning how to live the life in this world here among the population of the white people there. And a lot of the people there are making it there to live a good life, the way you count it there, as having a good home, a good car, a good boat, and all those things there that's important to the native people there. They learn how to go after it and get it there. That's how this land claims is affected us. And I noticed there that the younger people, after the corporations are coming through, they're educating themselves there in the different things there that they want to do in their life there. They point to the fact there that they want to come into the corporation there that they belong to, and they're having the education there that they so that they could come to that end. And I thank you for letting us know only the fact there. I wish there that more people could come down here and let us know about the rest of the world, how they live and what they do and how you got there and everything like that there, because we want to learn and we want to grow here in Saxman. And it's just only a little village there. Some things were offered to us there so that Saxman seemed like there that they could benefit from it. But we think about it different, and they don't come here to let us know what it's all about. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gaynor. Yes, certainly.
I left a lot of things out last night, and
go ahead.
I had some more dishes.
Didn't know you could give your family history. I like to read some of these that. I'm Matilda Kushnick. I reside here in Saxman. The late Margaret Marie Kennedy and the late George S. James Sr. were my parents of 1109 Woodland Avenue, Ketchikan. I was born at Port Beclair, Kuyu, Alaska, August 14, 1925. We stayed there till I had to go to school. I started school at Kloak, then we moved to Craig, then I left for Sheldon Jackson Mission School. I got married at a young age of 17 years to the late James Charles Sr. We bought a house in Craig. In 1950, November, Joe Williams moved us to Saxman. James Charles worked at the pulp mill 19 years before he passed on. I had to start on some education to support my children of 14. I had to get my GED to train for nursing. After 6 years working, I quit to go to college here in Ketchikan and Sheldon Jackson College. I also got in all the organizations I can for the benefit of our people. I took all the training I can to be a better board person. The organizations, I received certificates as part of what I have. I worked hard for the water and sewer, and we got it. And I worked on better health, eyeglasses, teeth, hearing aid, and better home for our people, and the elderly van, and the elderly hut lunch, and many other things. I'll give you this after. How the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act affected us on our hunting and fishing rights. We were not given the opportunity to vote on the hunting and fishing rights. So far, the effect we have is the timber cutting. None of our native corporations are benefiting from it. Shareholders can't work till just lately, and very few. The only ones benefiting is the white man, all from Washington and Oregon. Seems to me we just give the timber to them for nothing. As it stands, so far, we are in the hole. It's going to take us many years to come out ahead. And yet these white people are like Sealy, Rich from the West Coast Indians, building condominiums here in Ketchikan, buying the sawmill in Wrangell. All our main people running our corporation, most of them are white people, and all the administrations are getting rich. And we are starting back to where we first started, Land Claims Act. We are right back where we first started. We are not receiving anything. We see our timber going and no money coming in. I would like to see something done about this. Some looking into by our federal government. You look at our situations of Alaska Natives today is absolutely terrible. Our economy, for instance, the fishing canneries, Huna, Angoon, Cake, Kloak, Heidelberg, and are all shut down. That was our only source of income for our Native people. Reason too much politics in the fisheries today. Our Native people are the hardest hit. We depend mostly on fishing, that's all we know, and subsistence. Right now, I feel we have suffered enough on the fishing situation. Canada, Washington claims our fish. We have more streams and rivers here in Alaska, all species of fish. I feel the federal government should look at the hardship of our Native people our Native people are having right now. There are only about 127 Alaska shareholders holding permits. 62 are gill netters. Very few power troll and hand troll permits. Our communities are suffering. We are supposed to be the richest Indians in Alaska. We are far from it. Our goals for the Alaska Native future, I feel for the future, if we work with the IRA to find ways to save our land by turning 14C to IRA if we have to give our lands up. My mother and father are gone now, who helped fight for our land settlement. They did not receive anything from the land settlement, nor have we. Our parents fought for us kids. Now we are old and still nothing. I feel that having all these corporations have not invested wisely. For instance, the cannery along the coast of California. It don't help us, but went bankrupt. The canneries in Alaska should be opened. We should not log our own timbers. I feel we should put it up for bids. That way there will be no white people getting rich off us. The managers and the administrators eat up all the money. Without these middle people, our Native people will receive dividends. And the roads we have to build go to contractors at a great price. In the end, the state will take over the roads. I feel the state should help pay for the logging roads. I own 200 shares in Sea Alaska and 109 shares in Cape Fox Corporation. Right now we are on the bottom where we started. 1991, I want to own all my land and not give up some of our land like to the manager as a bonus. I know we can manage our own land. So help me God, Matilda Krishna. And I have a request from a brother-in-law of mine in Cake. From the time this corporation started, they have not changed or have an election of changing board of directors. Thank you. He wants to know what to be done about it.
I'm Martha Shields.
Yes.
And I lived here 71 years. And I've seen how the Tlingit and Haida was born in conventions. And you want to know about Saxman history? I was expecting Reynold Denny to come and tell you. I know some of it, what my uncle has told me. Not only me, different ones, they used to tell how who came about moving us here from K-Fox for education for the young people and to have church on the ground. And it was so far away, so they were looking for a place for our ancestors to live. And the man that was looking for place for K-Fox people, he drowned it out here. His name was Saxman. That's the way I was told from the people years back. So they named this place Saxman, and that's where they put us. So that's how we're here. And they had their own council, the older people. Then on it went, and my brother Joe Williams was on for 35 years after his uncle, what his uncle taught him. So on it went to convention. We go to convention. First it came up in Middle Cattle, I can't say the years. Then finally it came up at Haines. Then it got so big in convention, so they had to move it out of A and B to let the Tlingit and Haida. Lot of money. So that's when it started. Then 1971, when the children that were born after, I'd like to see them come in to this Sea Alaska. Because I have great grandchildren, I want you to know. So there is a lot of things happened between now and when it started, but just to let you know that the children will be looking forward to it if it does come through. And I know the land allotment, I don't know if it's in this. I try to write what I'm going to say, but I'm not used to taking shorthand like some people. My husband had a place in Thorn Arm, and to his dying bed they brought tape. He told them how his grandparents lived there and how they raised him there from the land. And it's on a tape. It went before the judge, and I understand they threw it out. A lot of things seems like would come so close and get warmed up, they promise. Promises. What happened to land allotment? Why was it promised, then took it back? See, the fish and game or someone got paid to burn up all our smokehouses in different, like Warkus Cove. I lived there with my mother and them. They burned that one up too. At the same time, Thorn Arm. Not only different places, they burned our material up. We put up our food. So when we tried to get this land allotment, they said it's going to court, so many of them. But now they look at it sideways. And this Tlingit and Haida, when it came, before it came about, everything was so peaceful. I went to school in here. Everything was quiet, and as soon as it came about, and when it came to Sea Alaska, a lot of money been spent. I came to meetings. Us shareholders didn't get anything. He said, you wait, all you're gonna get is $500. And that hurts, you know. After all, how many years my mother baked a cake And there's Lissa Denny and her family, other Burke's dad. They had it running over here at Twinket and Haida. When time came, I don't see them sitting at the office to get paid. We don't have no Indians in our corporation at the office from here, shareholders. I could see if they're sitting there, them getting the benefit from the corporation, and that's helping us, our people. They know what's going on. So it's going the other way. You heard it mentioned. Like our food, we live off land. The logging, it went so wild. Now we can't even go down the beach to a clean log when the barks are all on top of what we used to get. It wasn't taken care of. And the money also, I don't know. I can't pinpoint that one. Now how many years, 3 or 4 years, and they never get dividend in Saxman? Why? Because it went down to the bottom so fast. Not only here, different places. Now you're talking about 91. I always said, I'm not going to sell mine. I have a big family that can sure make use of it. Because my feelings are there, that's ours. Now we're going to get land from KFOX. Going to be turned over to city. You think we're going to have control of it? No. I don't think we'll control that either. I'm not used to writing my speeches, so if I brought something out that's in the wrong, you'll bear with me. So I have a lot of things in mind, but I figured most of it has been said already at this table. But my feeling is I wish the children that were born after 71 would get, and also the land allotment, can it be looked into, because it was right along with the Plinkett and High, that land claims. I don't know how you can help us, how you folks can help us. We sit here and complain to you.
Well, I've been asked to go around the state and take evidence about how the land claims settlement, ANCSA, has worked out, and to find out what your main concerns are. Well, you say your main concern is that you want the children born since 1971 to have shares. Well, that's an important point. A lot of other people, a lot of other Alaska Natives have said the same thing. So I'm going to write a report next year that will be made public, and I'll send a copy to you and to everybody else who testifies. And in it, based on what you tell me, I will make my recommendations, and then it will be up to Alaska Natives to decide if they want to plan their future on the basis of those recommendations that I make. In the end, it will be up to Alaska Natives. I'm going around getting the evidence, and I'll make the report. But Alaska Natives have to decide where they're going to go after that.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, too, I don't know, but like I watched the other, like Tlaquan comes down to Long Island, they bring their own crew down from their corporation, and ours, they get it from down south. And you don't see Indian running around, but they've been laid off. So just like Dewey Scan said, we have trials and temptation with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peter. Thank you very much.
My name is Ronald Dennis Sr. Born and raised in Saxon. I'd like to tell a little bit about the Saxon history. how the town came to be here. While the people were still in Cape Fox Village, those white people started coming to Alaska, and missionaries, Presbyterian missionaries, started coming to Alaska. And they came over there to Cape Fox Village. They wanted to have the people move to a place where they can have their get their education in school. And ours started here about 1866 or 67 around. Mr. Saxon came over here to look for a place where he wanted to have the school built for the people. They had a sawmill over there towards Middle Cattle there. Mr. Sackman, he had two or three native people with him. They went over there, get some lumber for house, church. Just when they came out here at Nichols Pasture, the wind came up and they both swung with all that lumber in there. And Mr. Saxon, he died right there, drowned. But they didn't stop there. The native people, they have some agents, Presbyterian church here that came to take his place and to start Saxon. After they got this settled, then they called this place after their Presbyterian minister, Mr. Saxon. They called here at the Saxon about 1879, around there about the time they start settling here. Everyone, the native people, start building houses. They had sawmills over there where the airport is. The sawmill there. Yellow cedar they cut and they native people. They don't have no big boat in them days, just canoes and some rowboats building. They bring their lumber over here to build houses. That's around 1879 they started here. And all those people, they work just like one person. When something come up with the people and said, they work together. They started a council on their own, no education of any kind. But they had the idea they have to do something to build up the town. So they formed a council among themselves. Anyone that could tell it, they sometimes the whole town get together for counseling. And they talk about what they have to do. They had a boardwalk built from, I think, all the way to that end at that time. They didn't have any other kind of business, so whatever money they have to use for the town, they reach in their pocket. They put up their own money to do what they need to build, anything they need to be built. They do it themselves on their own. That's the way it's been going. Till up to the time the Saxon town was incorporated, up to that time, we still didn't have very much of anything going in Saxon except the council. 7-member council. We had elected a mayor. Joe Williams stayed in as a mayor for over 30 years. He was a member. Every year he was re-elected again for a mayor. Till before he died, somebody else took him. That's the way Saxon came to be here. And the native people, we are in a town by ourselves. We don't go along with Ketchikan. Saxon is an incorporated city. and will live by us, all the people that's here. They live here and they're rooted down in Sac. Somebody else always want to come along and try to uproot the people. They want to move us to Ketchikan for the Salvation Army. That really half us upset on those things like that. We don't want to be moved around just like they put us here for what they want us to do. The people here from 1900 on, the people here has been here, born and raised. And some of these people that are relations, they come here, they live with us, to make more people in Sac. Some of them married, some white men married native people. And they take them in just for the population to increase. And after the, when we were working on the land claim, just only a few of us, we drink those days, me and my wife, Philip Major and his wife, my niece Irene, and my nephew, William. We all drink, but we still kept on going when they working on the land claims. Yeah. Only a few of us. We work. Any time they ask for any money, we go to the house, ask for money. So can they ask for money to keep their land claims going. So we send money up there. Whatever we can get sometimes for that. Coffee seal or something, and we sent money up there. After the land claim is settled, nobody knows who was working on. We're not even mentioned. But we don't care. In those days, we think of the ones that's going to come behind us, the next generation. That's what we were working for. We don't have to be mentioned, but we want to see what we work for to come true. That's what we work for. After the land claim comes, her and I and my brother-in-law, we're out of it. We just watch from outside. The people that have education now are working on these things. So the effect on the people here, they were happy when their land came through. Money. Everybody who wants, who doesn't want. But everybody was happy when the land claim came through in 71.